They thought it would rekindle their passion. Emma and David, married for 7 years, felt the spark had dimmed. A private, no-judgment hotel room. A third person, a night they'd never forget. But the moment they climaxed, the door clicked. Lights flashed, a camera turned, a voice they didn't recognize, razor sharp, cold. I have everything. I know what you want, and I know what you fear. Suddenly, their private fantasy becomes a nightmare. A stranger vanished, leaving only footage, a threat, a demand. Money, or it goes viral. More sex, more control, and the hit escalates. They can't call friends or police. Not yet. Everyone's privacy is at risk. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment. Because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Invitation and insecurity. Emma sat at the end of the dining table, absent-mindedly twirling her wine glass by the stem. The rain outside beat a steady, lonely rhythm on the window. She glanced at David, who was reading the news on his phone. His brow furrowed as he scrolled. Same routine, same silence, every night for months now. When did things get so predictable? When did the spark flicker out? Emma could almost trace it to a moment, a slow accumulation of late work nights, text messages left on read, and hugs that lingered just a second too short. David had always been the one to pull her back from the edge, the voice she trusted when her own head filled with doubts. Now she wondered if they even knew each other anymore. They had tried everything to fix it. Date nights scheduled weeks in advance. Couples therapy, twice. Books on communication, stacked high and left unread. Even a failed weekend getaway that ended in a petty fight over directions and cold room service. David finally put his phone down, noticing Emma staring through him instead of at him. "You okay?" he asked quietly. He knew her well enough to recognize when her mind was running. Emma took a deep breath. "Do you ever think maybe we need something new? Something different?" David looked confused, then wary. "Like what?" Emma hesitated. She had rehearsed this in her mind a dozen times, but the words felt heavier in the real, holding their lives for ransom. "You can't reason with someone like this," Marcus said. "They only stop when they get caught or get bored. Sometimes you have to set a trap." Marcus laid out the basics. Keep all evidence. Respond to demands. But stall for time. Try to get Mara to reveal a pattern. An in-person meeting. A pickup spot. Anything that could tie her to the crime. Emma and David decided to fight. For the first time since this nightmare began, they felt a flicker of hope. It was risky. If Mara caught on, she might escalate or release the footage. But the alternative was to keep living in fear, letting her chip away at everything they loved. They set up hidden cameras in their apartment in case Mara ever tried to approach in person. They started using secure messaging apps. David even bought a small, inexpensive GPS tracker in case Mara arranged a drop-off or face-to-face meeting. Mara noticed the change. Her messages grew sharper, more demanding. She seemed to sense resistance, but she didn't have proof. "I'm getting tired of waiting. You two better be ready for my next request. If you're not, the world will know your secrets. Trust me, I don't bluff." Emma and David braced themselves. The game had changed. Now, they were playing too. In the darkness of their bedroom, Emma held David close. For the first time in weeks, she whispered, "We might get our lives back." David squeezed her hand, determination in his eyes. "We will." But as they drifted to sleep, Both knew the next move could change everything. Forever. Chapter 5. Unmasking, Emma found herself watching people more closely than ever before. She scrutinized every unfamiliar face in the grocery store, every stranger's glance on the street, searching for some clue. Anything that might link a real person to the nightmare that haunted their lives. She wondered what Mara looked like outside the dim glow of a hotel room. What kind of person could engineer such cold and intricate cruelty? Marcus, the private investigator, worked methodically. He started with the few leads David and Emma had. Burner phone numbers, bank accounts, payment methods, and the erratic patterns of Mara's messages. He brought calm, practical advice. Avoid emotional confrontation. Keep detailed records. Don't make sudden moves. The first break came on a rainy Wednesday. David received a message from Mara, as usual, but this time she made a small mistake. In her rush, she sent the message from her personal phone, one digit off from her usual anonymous number. Marcus caught it immediately. "It's local," Marcus said, his voice measured but urgent. "I can't get a name, but it's definitely registered in this city. That narrows it down." Emma and David's fear twisted into adrenaline. Mara wasn't some distant, faceless predator. She was nearby. Maybe even someone they'd passed on the street. Over the next week, Marcus traced more digital breadcrumbs. One of Mara's payment accounts connected, through a shell company, to an apartment complex across town. Surveillance footage wasn't easily available. But Marcus knew a building manager willing to look the other way, for a cash fee. Emma struggled with the knowledge that Mara was close, possibly watching. She scanned crowds for the familiar curve of Mara's jaw, her posture, the slight limp Emma remembered from their night together. But the city was too big, the faces too many. Meanwhile, Mara's demands continued. She grew bolder, requiring them to make public appearances together, to pose for photos in the same outfits as the night of the crime. She wanted them anxious, on edge, always wondering if she was watching. Each demand now came with a new twist, a challenge or dare that threatened their dignity and sense of self. Emma sometimes felt her own mind breaking, her old life dissolving in the acid of fear and shame. But with each new humiliation, she grew more determined. She refused to be broken. One afternoon, Marcus called with news. He had reviewed security footage from the apartment complex tied to Mara's banking details. On three occasions, a woman matching Mara's general description, mid-30s, medium height, dark hair, had entered the building late at night, carrying a large purse. "We're close," Marcus told them. "I'll stake out the building tomorrow. If she's really using this place, she'll come back." Emma and David waited, nerves stretched tight. That night, another message arrived from Mara. "You're almost out of time. One more slip and I send the video to everyone you know. Last chance. Be at the hotel. 10 o'clock. Alone." Emma shivered at the message's finality. She typed a reply with trembling fingers. "We'll be there. Please, just tell us what you want. Why are you doing this?" Mara's answer was instant and chilling. "Because I can. Because you let me in." The next morning, Marcus called with the breakthrough they'd been hoping for. "She showed up last night. I followed her when she left. She went to a rundown office building 2 blocks from your old apartment. I got her license plate." With the plate number, Marcus dug deeper. The car was registered to a Marissa Grant, a name that felt both unfamiliar and eerily fitting. Marcus sent Emma and David the name and a grainy photo of Marissa, snapped on a cell phone in the glow of a street lamp. Emma's breath caught. There was no mistaking it. The woman from the photo was Mara. The same confident, careful woman who'd charmed her in the bar. The woman who'd whispered promises of safety before taking everything. They now had an address, a real name, and evidence linking Marissa Grant to the bank accounts and burner phones. Marcus advised caution. Don't confront her yourselves. Let me gather everything. Once we have enough, we'll go to the police. But Mara, as if sensing the net closing in, sent one last terrifying message. You think you're smart. I know you're digging. If you try anything, the video drops. If you want this to end, you'll do exactly as I say. One last time. Emma and David sat together, hearts racing. They had Mara's real name, but she still had the video and the power to destroy them. Their only chance was to play along, stall for time, and hope Marcus could collect enough to put Mara away before she could do any more damage. The fight was far from over. But for the first time, Emma and David felt the weight of hope return, fragile as glass, but brighter than it had been in weeks. Chapter 6. The Confrontation. The morning of the final meeting arrived with a pale, gray dawn. Emma sat at the edge of the bed, her hands clasped so tightly her knuckles turned white. David moved quietly around the apartment, packing his phone, a change of clothes, and the evidence folder Marcus had assembled. They barely spoke. There was nothing left to say that hadn't already been whispered in the dark. Marcus met them in a diner across from the police station, his face grave but steady. He had spent the night compiling every bit of digital evidence, emails, texts, wire transfer receipts, screenshots, timestamps, and the photo of Marissa Grant entering the building. It was enough. Barely. This is our shot, Marcus said, his voice low. I've spoken with Detective Olivia Barrett. She's seen these cases before. She'll be in place at the hotel tonight with a team. You'll go in, act as if you're complying, and wait for Mara to show her hand. The moment she makes a demand, especially for money or sex, we've got her. Emma felt a jolt of fear. What if she senses the trap? What if she runs or releases the video anyway? Marcus squeezed her hand gently. We're monitoring every possible channel. The second she tries to upload or send anything, it'll be flagged. Just stay calm. Follow her instructions until the signal. David nodded grimly. We'll do whatever it takes. As the sun sank behind slate clouds, Emma and David walked to the hotel, an old, anonymous building in a part of town where secrets stayed buried. They wore nondescript clothes, carrying only what was necessary. Detective Barrett and her team waited in an unmarked van around the corner, radio static humming in their ears. The hotel room was cold, the air thick with anticipation. Emma paced, checking her phone every minute. David sat on the bed, eyes locked on the door. At exactly 10 o'clock, a quiet knock sounded. Emma opened the door. Mara, Marissa Grant, stood there, poised and unflinching. Her dark hair was tied back, eyes hard and expressionless. She carried a small satchel and her phone, nothing else. Nice to see you again, she said, stepping inside. David tried to keep his voice steady. What do you want, Mara? Why keep pushing? Mara smiled, a trace of bitterness in the curve of her lips. You should know by now. It's not about the money anymore. It's about watching you squirm. She set the satchel on the table and pulled out a small tablet, booting it up with practiced ease. She slid a paper across the table, a list of new demands, each more invasive than the last. Emma's hands trembled, but she followed Marcus's advice, pretending to comply. She and David took out the envelope of cash Mara had demanded, sliding it across the table. "Good," Mara said. "Now the rest." As she began giving further instructions, Detective Barrett's team made their move. The door burst open, officers flooding the room, guns drawn. Mara froze, shock flashing across her face for the first time. "Police, don't move!" Detective Barrett shouted, crossing the space in seconds. Mara tried to snatch her phone, but an officer pinned her wrist to the table, securing the device. In the chaos, Emma and David clung to each other, relief and terror mixing in their chests. Mara struggled, hissing curses as she was handcuffed. Barrett held up the tablet. "We have everything, Marissa. The accounts, the threats, the recordings, you're done." Mara spat at the detective. "You have no idea what you're getting into." "We know enough," Barrett replied, her voice sharp. "And you're going to answer for all of it." Emma slumped against David, tears streaming down her face, tears of fear, of exhaustion, and finally, of relief. The room that had once promised excitement, then humiliation, now became the stage for their freedom. The officers led Mara away, her bravado slipping as she realized she was truly cornered. Emma and David sat in stunned silence as Barrett returned, her face softening. "You two are safe now," she assured them. "We'll need you to come to the station tomorrow to give statements. And don't worry, we'll make sure the footage is never seen again." Marcus appeared at the door, giving Emma and David a small, proud smile. "You did it. You both did." In the hotel's empty hush, Emma and David finally allowed themselves to hope. It was over. The nightmare had a face, a name, and now, a cell to call her own. They walked into the night together, changed forever, but finally, free. Chapter 7. Aftermath and Clarity. 3 weeks later, Emma sat outside the courthouse with her coat pulled tightly around her shoulders. The wind carried the scent of cold metal and distant traffic. Across from her, David sat quietly, hands folded, eyes focused on the wide stone steps where Marissa Grant would soon be brought in under guard. The past few weeks had been surreal. Marissa, had been denied bail after police uncovered evidence of multiple extortion schemes. Emma and David weren't her only victims. There were others, an older couple, in Connecticut, a divorced man in Ohio, a closeted politician whose footage had never surfaced but had clearly been used against him. Marissa had played a long, cold game. Her laptop held a digital graveyard of secrets, faces, and encrypted video files. The charges filed against her were extensive. Extortion, distribution of intimate images without consent, wire fraud, identity theft. She was facing decades, not just years. But even as justice loomed, Emma struggled to feel whole again. She and David had returned home after Mara's arrest, but nothing felt the same. The apartment felt haunted by what they had endured. What they had done, even willingly, before consent was stolen from them. Some days, she couldn't look David in the eye. Other days, she clung to him like a lifeline. The intimacy was different now. Not gone, but cautious. They spoke carefully, moved slowly, touched with permission. Sometimes they'd sit in silence for hours, fingers intertwined, needing nothing more than presence. Therapy helped. Emma had found a trauma specialist, someone who didn't flinch when she talked about shame or control. David went too, both together and alone. And for the first time in their marriage, they spoke with brutal honesty. "I didn't say no when you suggested it," David had confessed one night. "But I was scared. Not of you, of what it might mean. of what it would uncover. Emma had cried then, not because he'd been weak, but because he'd been human. They gave their statements to the district attorney. They reviewed the footage, what little they could stomach, to verify it hadn't been altered or tampered with. Detective Barrett was meticulous, never treating them like fools or deviants, just people, victims, survivors. Today was arraignment. Marissa would hear the charges formally, plead guilty or not, and the timeline for trial would begin. Emma and David didn't have to be there, but they came anyway. Inside the courtroom, Marissa looked different, smaller. Her dark hair pulled back tightly, her hands cuffed in front of her. No smile, no power. Just a woman who had spent years hiding behind anonymity and now couldn't even look her victims in the eye. When her name was called, she stood and pleaded not guilty. David whispered, "Of course she did." Emma nodded, but her eyes didn't leave Marissa. She studied her, not with hatred, but with curiosity. What had broken in this woman to make her break others? What hole inside her could only be filled by control? Afterward, outside, reporters swarmed. Emma and David gave a short statement, prepared by Marcus in the DA's office. "We were manipulated, recorded without our consent, and blackmailed. But we chose to fight back, not just for ourselves, but for others. What happened to us is not shameful, it's criminal, and we're reclaiming our story." They didn't take questions. They didn't owe explanations. Back home, Emma lit a candle. Not for peace or healing, but for cleansing. She stood by the window, watching the flame flicker, then extinguish. David walked in, holding two mugs of tea. "Cold outside," he said softly. She turned to face him. "Not as cold as it was in here." They sat together on the couch, shoulder to shoulder, the silence no longer heavy but shared. "What do we do now?" Emma asked. David thought for a long moment. Then he said, "We live, honestly. Without pretending we're okay when we're not. Without secrets. And if we get scared again, we talk. We stay in the light." She nodded. "And if someone ever tries to trap us again?" "We don't hide," he said. "We fight." Emma leaned her head against his shoulder. Outside, the clouds had begun to part. A sliver of sunlight broke through, soft and golden, not enough to warm the room, but enough to remind them. Night doesn't last forever. They had survived. Not untouched, not unchanged, but together, air. "What if we tried inviting someone else in, just once? No strings, just to see if it makes us feel alive again." David blinked, and for a moment, Emma thought he might laugh. Instead, he reached for his glass, taking a long sip. "Are you serious?" "I am," she said, holding his gaze. "I want us back. I want to want you the way I used to. I don't want us to break, David. But I'm scared if we keep doing the same thing." David sat back. The idea was wild, but not as shocking as it might have been a year ago. He'd read enough online stories, heard about couples reinventing themselves, chasing lost excitement. Some ended up closer, others in ruins. But Emma's face wasn't the face of someone chasing a thrill. She was afraid. Afraid of losing what they had, and desperate to keep it. "Okay," he said quietly. "Let's talk about it. Boundaries, rules, all of it. If we're going to do this, it has to be us. Together." They stayed up past midnight, hashing out their wants and their fears. No separate meetings, no lies. Only one night. If anything felt wrong, they'd call it off immediately. They agreed to look together. No secret texts, no hidden chats. Over the next week, their bedroom became a war room. Laptops open, profiles on discreet apps, messages from strangers, some crude, some intriguing, most ignored. Emma laughed out loud at the absurd ones. Couples seeking plus one for all-night disco and pancakes. David rolled his eyes at half-naked mirror selfies from men who never showed their faces. Eventually, Emma found Mara. Her profile was different. Smart, well-written, clear about her own rules and limits. Mara wasn't looking for a relationship, just the right kind of fun, consensual, respectful, safe. She looked beautiful, but her messages made her feel real. No pressure, no expectations. David read the chats, surprised at how normal it all felt. Mara asked questions that made them think about what they wanted, not just sexually, but emotionally. What made them happy? What scared them? What lines would they never cross? After a week of talking, they agreed to meet in person. A drink at a quiet bar, just conversation. Mara arrived dressed simply. Jeans, boots, a white blouse. She was easy to talk to, quick to laugh. And she made both of them feel seen. There was no flirting, no touching, just a shared sense of curiosity. Afterward, Emma and David walked home, arm in arm, something they hadn't done in months. "I like her," Emma whispered. "Me too," David said. For the first time in a long while, he felt hope instead of dread. They planned everything together. Emma chose the hotel, downtown, anonymous, high ratings for privacy. David set the boundaries in writing, just in case. No cameras, no surprises. Everyone could walk away at any time. When the night came, their nerves were electric. Mara arrived, soft perfume and a bottle of wine in hand. She was playful but gentle, asking permission at every step, making sure Emma felt in control. David watched his wife come alive, laughing and teasing in a way he hadn't seen in years. The first hour passed in conversation. They joked about awkward online profiles, traded favorite movie scenes. Mara pulled out a deck of cards, suggesting a game. Never have I ever. The mood turned flirty, nervous energy sparking. It started slow, an accidental touch, a daring glance. Emma and Mara kissed first, David hesitating, then joining, every move cautious but eager. Soon, laughter faded, replaced by breathless whispers and gentle gasps. For a moment, time stopped. Emma felt everything at once. Fear, excitement, guilt, relief. She saw David's eyes, full of love and something else. Something she hadn't seen in a while. And then, as the night reached its peak, Emma heard something. A quiet click by the lamp. She barely registered it, lost in the rush of adrenaline. But a tiny red light winked from the dresser, unnoticed. Afterward, tangled in sheets, the three lay together, quiet and spent. Mara smiled, dressed, and excused herself. "You two are beautiful," she whispered, kissing Emma's forehead. Then she was gone, as if she'd never been there. David and Emma looked at each other, laughing nervously. Relief washed over them. They did it. No drama. No regret. Neither noticed the phone missing from Mara's purse, nor the way she glanced back at the door, satisfaction in her eyes. In the quiet, the danger was already lurking, silent as a shadow. But for tonight, Emma and David felt closer than they had in years, unaware that the biggest threat to their marriage had only just begun. Chapter 2. Under the Yaws, Len's morning in the city always carried a certain heaviness. But today, the air in Emma and David's apartment was lighter than it had been in years. The night before felt almost like a dream. They moved through their Sunday routine with a kind of gentle awe, smiling at one another in the kitchen, their laughter spilling out with the morning coffee. Emma made pancakes while David played their favorite old reggae playlist. There was no need for words. They had crossed a line together, and against all odds, it had brought them closer. Even the air seemed to hum with possibility. But as Emma sat down to eat, her phone vibrated. At first, she ignored it. A few minutes later, it buzzed again, 3 times in rapid succession. She frowned. The number was unlisted, not saved in her contacts. Curious, she unlocked her phone and opened the message thread. "Hey, beautiful. Hope you enjoyed last night as much as I did." Emma smiled, feeling a warmth in her chest. But then another message popped up, this time with a file attached. "Thought you might like a souvenir. Check this out before breakfast." Emma tapped on the video. It buffered, then played. A shaky, intimate scene. At first, she thought it was just a memory. But then she saw herself, David, and Mara, framed perfectly from across the hotel room. The angle was wrong, impossible. Her blood ran cold as she realized it was filmed by someone else. Someone watching. The video was clear, every detail exposed. Her breath caught in her throat. She looked up, panic rising. But David was already watching her, concern etched on his face. "What is it?" he asked. Emma's hands shook as she handed him the phone. "You need to see this." David watched in silence, the color draining from his face. The weight of the moment pressed in on both of them. When the video ended, there was a pause, a long, empty stretch of fear. A new message arrived. "I have a copy saved in 12 places. Don't even think about deleting it. Here's how this is going to work." Emma felt sick. She pressed her palm to her mouth, fighting the urge to cry. David squeezed her hand, trying to anchor himself. "First, you're going to send me $5,000. Right now. Don't stall. I know your jobs, your family, your friends. If you think I'm bluffing, try me. Next, you'll meet me again. Same hotel, new rules. I'll be in touch with details. And don't even dream of calling the cops. If you do, this video goes to everyone you know. Try me. I dare you." The silence in their kitchen was deafening. Emma stared at the screen. This can't be real. She wouldn't. She was so kind. David shook his head. "She was careful, Emma. She played us. We didn't see it coming." Emma's mind raced. Every moment of the night replayed, searching for signs she missed. Mara's careful placement of her purse, her insistence on keeping her jacket nearby, her subtle glances at the dresser. It all felt obvious now. David grabbed his laptop and started searching for information about blackmail, sex torsion, what to do when someone threatens to leak private videos. The advice was the same everywhere. Don't panic, don't pay, unless you absolutely have to. Save all communication. Document everything. But fear is louder than logic, and the threat felt real. Their lives, their reputations, their jobs could be destroyed in a single moment. Another message arrived, this time with a list of their close contacts. Family members, co-workers, even Emma's boss. Mara had done her homework. "It's not just about the money," the next message read. "I want you to listen. I want you to follow instructions. I want you to remember who has the power now." The room spun. Emma's heart hammered. "We have to go to the police," she whispered. David shook his head. "And tell them what? That we invited a stranger into our marriage bed and she blackmailed us? Even if they believe us, what if she's telling the truth? What if she does leak it?" Emma broke down in tears. David tried to comfort her, but his own hands were shaking. They sat together, feeling helpless. Everything that felt new and exciting last night was now a trap. Every moment of pleasure had become a weapon. Hours passed. They considered ignoring Mara, blocking her number, calling her bluff. But fear won out. They transferred the money, just as instructed. Minutes later, Mara confirmed the payment. Good. You're fast learners. Next time, don't make me wait. Stay tuned. I'll be in touch. Emma and David spent the rest of the day in silence, barely speaking, barely moving. The weight of their mistake pressed down on them, suffocating. For the first time, Emma wondered if their marriage could survive. Not just the betrayal, but the shame, the fear, the constant threat. That night, Emma lay awake, staring at the ceiling, the darkness broken only by the pale light of her phone. Every sound outside made her jump. Every shadow felt like Mara waiting. David lay next to her, eyes open, both of them too afraid to sleep. In that room, with secrets piling up, they realized the worst was yet to come. Mara had what she wanted, and she was just getting started. Chapter 3. The Demands Begin. Emma woke before dawn, heart pounding from a dream she couldn't remember. The world outside was quiet, but inside her head, every noise sounded like a threat. She lay on her side, watching David sleep. She wondered if he dreamed of Mara, of the video, or simply of escape. By morning, neither of them had slept much. The apartment, once a sanctuary, felt like a trap. David brewed coffee in silence. Emma sat at the kitchen table, scrolling through her messages. Nothing from Mara. For a moment, she let herself hope it was over, that Mara would take the money and vanish, leaving them to rebuild. But then, just after sunrise, Emma's phone vibrated again. "Good morning, lovers," the message read. "Hope you slept well. I have new instructions." She hesitated before opening the attachment. This time there was no video, just a list. "Emma will call in sick to work today. David will email his supervisor to say he has a family emergency. Both will go to the hotel room, same one as before, by 11 a.m. Wait for further instructions. Do not discuss this with anyone. Do not leave the room until told." Emma's hands shook as she handed the phone to David. He read the message in silence, jaw clenched. "She wants us together, alone, at her mercy." Emma's eyes filled with tears. "I can't go through this again. I just can't." David's voice was low. "We don't have a choice. If we don't do what she says, she'll send the video. She has everything." They went through the motions. Calls made, excuses given, bags packed with trembling hands. In the cab to the hotel, neither spoke. The driver made small talk, but they barely heard him. When they arrived, the room felt different. What was once a space of adventure now radiated fear. Emma checked every corner, searching for hidden cameras, but found nothing. David sat on the edge of the bed, staring at the wall. Minutes passed. Then the phone buzzed again. "Strip down to your underwear and take a selfie together, smiling. Send it to me within 5 minutes. If you don't, I'll start sending clips to your contacts." Emma's breath caught. "She's sick," she whispered. David nodded. "She wants control, total control." They did as they were told, sending the photo. Mara's response was immediate. "Beautiful. Now wait for my next message. Don't move. Don't even think about leaving." Hours dragged by. Every noise in the hallway made them jump. Emma's mind raced. What if someone recognized them? What if Mara was watching, just out of sight? At noon, Mara called. Her voice was casual, almost cheerful. "You two are naturals. Ready for the next step?" Emma tried to keep her voice steady. "What do you want?" "I want a show. Tonight, you'll do everything I say. You'll film it on your own phone and send it to me when you're done. Don't mess it up." If you refuse, you know what happens. David clenched his fists. You can't keep this up forever. Mara laughed. You'd be surprised, but I'll make you a deal. Impress me, and maybe I'll go away. Maybe. The call ended. Emma felt sick. David looked at her, his eyes full of anger and fear. We can't let her do this to us, he said. We have to fight back. Emma shook her head. She has everything, David. We're trapped. But David was already searching for solutions, scrubbing their social media, changing passwords, looking up ways to track a blackmailer. He found stories online of people who fought back. Sometimes the threats were empty, sometimes not. Most advice said the same thing. Document everything. Never send more. Get help. But what if help just made it worse? As the day bled into evening, Emma sat in the hotel bathroom, knees drawn to her chest. She tried to steady her breathing, to find some sense of control. She thought of her job, her parents, her friends. What would they say if they saw her like this? Would they understand? Or would she be shamed, cast out, ruined? When it was time, she and David did as they were told. The recording was awkward, robotic. There was no pleasure, only fear. When they finished, they sent the file. Mara's reply was instant. Nice work. We're just getting started. Next time, I want something even more daring. I'll be in touch. The message was like a chain tightening around their throats. Emma felt herself slipping, the world narrowing to just this. Obedience, shame, survival. David held her in the dark, whispering, "We'll find a way out. We have to." But as the night dragged on, hope felt further away than ever. Chapter 4. A desperate plan, Emma hardly recognized her own reflection anymore. Dark circles rimmed her eyes, her hair unwashed, shoulders drawn up with constant tension. The apartment, once a place of love and comfort, now felt like a prison cell. She jumped at every phone notification, her nerves shredded raw. David wasn't faring much better. He had stopped shaving, barely ate, and checked their bank account every hour, terrified Mara would bleed them dry. For days, they lived in limbo, waiting for Mara's next message, dreading every alert. Their work suffered. Emma missed deadlines. David skipped meetings. Friends called, but they ignored them, afraid any slip could draw attention. The only time they spoke freely was in the shower, where the rush of water masked their whispers. Even there, Emma sometimes felt Mara's invisible gaze. One night, after another string of humiliating demands, Emma broke down in the bathroom. She slid to the floor, sobbing into her knees. David found her there, crumpled and shaking. He knelt beside her, holding her tightly, whispering that they would find a way out. "I can't do this anymore, David," she wept. "She owns us. We don't even know her real name." He wiped her tears, voice shaking. "I've been looking for ways to fight back. I've read everything. The FBI, cyber safety sites. Most people just give in or disappear. But some fight. They collect evidence, trace messages. Maybe we can trap her." Emma looked at him through swollen eyes. How? She could ruin us at any moment. David pulled out his laptop, showing her the files he'd saved. Screenshots, message logs, timestamps. If we can find a mistake, a clue, maybe we can go to the police. If not, maybe we can find someone who knows what to do. Emma hesitated, then nodded. Anything was better than waiting for Mara's next command. That night, they devised a plan. Emma would pretend to cooperate, act as if Mara had total control, while David quietly collected every scrap of information they could get. They researched the safest way to document blackmail, saving every message, photographing every demand, even recording their phone calls on a hidden app. They combed through Mara's messages, looking for patterns. She used burner phone numbers and anonymous emails, but her style was distinct. Short, direct, and always with the same signature. M. They noticed her demands often came at specific times, late mornings and early evenings. She never called at night. David found a pattern in the payment requests. Each time Mara demanded money, she sent a different account number, but the accounts were always from the same online bank. He traced the bank's headquarters to a city only 2 hours away. It was a small clue, but it was something. Emma wrote a journal, logging her emotions and thoughts. She wanted a record, in case she ever needed to prove what happened. Sometimes she wrote letters to Mara that she never sent, trying to understand why someone would do this. Meanwhile, Mara's demands continued. New humiliations, more money, and the threat of exposure always hanging over them. But Emma and David grew careful, never letting on that anything had changed. One morning, Mara made a mistake. She sent a text from a number she'd used weeks earlier, one they'd already saved. David quickly ran it through a phone lookup site and found a partial match to a local area code. It wasn't much, but it gave them hope. Maybe Mara wasn't a faceless, untouchable villain after all. Maybe she was closer than they thought. That night, Emma reached out to a friend who worked in IT security. She didn't share details, just asked about tracing anonymous accounts and protecting privacy. Her friend, sensing real fear in Emma's voice, offered to help, no questions asked. David continued digging, following the trail of payments and messages. He reached out to a private investigator online, using an encrypted chat. The investigator, a retired detective named Marcus, agreed to meet in person, no records, cash only. Marcus explained that these cases were becoming more common, with blackmailers preying on couples, recording their most vulnerable moments and